CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples. Find us online at cjsf.ca and on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and SoundCloud.
Welcome to Teachings in the Air. Welcome to Teachings in the Air podcast with Jerry Oldman, coming to you from Hunkaminam territory with a podcast series about Indigenous men's health and wellness. We aim to inspire, motivate, and empower Indigenous men to be sound in mind, body, and spirit. Because that's what health means.
This is Teachings in the Air with Jerry Oldman. Today my podcast is called Huishtwi, which means let's go. Actually, I'm talking to myself, let's go. And I'm dedicating today's podcast to one of my relatives, my loved relatives that has gone to the spirit world. And he's the one that said to me one day in the 90s, Jerry, I don't want you to be a warrior. I want you to be a warrior. So since that day, I've become a warrior for peace, for justice, anti-poverty, anti-suicide, for goodness, you know, for justice. You know, so actually this, you know, all my podcasts are based on my journey in life. Or when I ask guests to come about their journey in life, about our experiences. You know, so actually, you know, today is about Jerry on his journey to retrieve his spirit. Because remember, our spirit is what holds my body together, that it's my force of life, that when my spirit leaves my body to go back to the spirit world, my body's going to fall apart. So I had to go through a process of spirit retrieval. And you might ask, well, Jerry, who took your spirit? You know, how could they do that? But actually, they impacted it. They weakened it. And who's this they? I'm very conscious of how I speak today, and I do my best to be clear, to be authentic, to be accurate. And the they that I'm referring to in this podcast, of course, is what people call the colonizer. Then the lackeys of the colonizers. You know, we were oppressed, put down. Our very being was put down, our identity as a people. You know, as a baby, I was basically a pure human being, just like all babies. Because we didn't have a lived experience yet. You know, I absorbed everything coming through the air while I was in my mom, and when I come out, I was told we absorbed everything like a sponge until we were 6 years of age, negative and positive. In an indigenous way, we were taught to be careful and sincere with our words when we're speaking to children or to other human beings, because it goes into them and will have an impact on our life. So this oppression, actually what it was cruel and unjust treatment of individuals, of communities, of nations. Once a oppressor gained control, gained power, and believe me, they were in love with power. They wanted the resources of the territories we occupied and used for thousands of years. So once they gained control or power, they demanded strict obedience from us. Strict obedience. We were told how to live. How to parent. We lost our freedom, our way of life. And they created an identity for us of that we are inferior people. That there's something wrong with us. The very first created identity was that we were pagans, savages, heathens, because we did not know Christ, which is common sense. You know, we had our own practices, our own ways of maintaining our spirit. So once the power was gained by these newcomers, we were segregated. We were separated from every Canadian, put onto reservations, told, you know, with strict laws how to live there. Learned to have the live a life of permission. The Indian agent said, yes, you can, no, you cannot. You know that oppression, cruel and unjust treatment. I often wondered how we could accept this as at the very beginning. Not knowing, because of course I wasn't there, not knowing what my relatives were going through. That if you said, no, you're not taking my children to residential school. The oppressors had the power to put you in jail for 6 months plus a fine of $50, which is a lot of money in that time. You know that segregation by force. You know, that whole experience of enforced separation from the land we occupied and used and put onto tiny reservations. And also being locked out of the economy. Being told when you can fish and when you can hunt and where. You know, that was totally foreign to my people. People started going to jail for hunting and fishing or for doing potlatch. And I think of the way of life that I knew that we traded with other nations, other tribes in this country, from flint to salmon to Ulgan grease to tanned deer hides, canoes. That we had an economy, an active economy, and were active participants. So that segregation had a powerful impact on our people. It literally taken the power from a group of people, and the individuals were impacted. So segregation happened. Tiny reservations. Residential schools, Indian day schools. They didn't want any part of us. Or the leadership, anyway. I imagine there were a lot of good people, you know, that didn't mind, you know, and interacted with our people. So the segregation was, along with it, was a forced assimilation. And assimilation means a gradual absorption of one society into another, which in this case was not true. They didn't want to have us absorbed into their society. But what the assimilation they were doing was taking away the power. Our language, there's power in language. It guides us. It's principles of how to live, how to be with each other. Assimilation into eating their style of food that became toxic for us and started to harm our bodies till this day. Assimilate us into Christianity ceremony. Our ceremonies were outlawed. Our governance, our way of governing ourselves. We're assimilated into Canadian style of majority rule, Indian Act, democracy. And the result of that for myself was to lower my expectations. To, you know, there's limits to what I can do when I cannot do, where I can go, you know, what I can have. And the big part of it was becoming passive. Because of the overwhelming numbers of people against us. And we were weakened by smallpox and other pandemics. Really. Probably, I don't know how many years it took to recover from that. Maybe we're still in recovery. We started to live a life where our future was determined by Ottawa. The Indian Act, the Minister of Indian Affairs, people living far away from us, making decisions of how we're to live. That message is constantly coming through the air that our ways are inferior. That we do not deserve anything better than what we were getting. Being taught that we didn't have rights to fish and to hunt the way we used to, or to parent. So this segregation and assimilation, we're actually becoming institutionalized. You know, when you're told when to wake up, when to go to sleep, when to do this, when to do that, you're institutionalized. When you live that life, you accept that life. And I lived that life. And in these institutions, they embedded into me, they put into me that our way was inferior. That our way had no value. You know those institutions? It's very oppressive. There were very strict authoritarian laws, racist laws. It's compulsory for us to be Christian. They outlawed the potlatch, the sundance, our spiritual practices. So being institutionalized, you start to lose your independence and you wait for the order. Growing up in this, I started to not have enthusiasm or excitement for education or for my life. My life became hateful. So that's what happened. My spirit was taken. Nobody asked. If I wanted to be a Christian or if I wanted to go to residential school, any of those things that other human beings had in Canada. So I suffered. I became addicted. I thought negative, acted negative, behaved negative. Didn't feel I had a future. Then, of course, I heard so many people say, I hit the bottom. There's nowhere else to go but up, so I started to go up. I had that experience, too. Came to me, there's time for me to uplift my spirit and find joy and beauty in life. To heck with this negativity. I actually had those kinds of thoughts. Started to break through the limitations that I felt were real, that there were chains holding me down, but they were planted years ago, even before I was born, these limitations. It became intergenerational. We believed that we didn't have the rights. I believed I didn't have the rights. For me to uplift my spirit and take it back, I had to break through those limitations and overcome my fears, to learn how to use my voice, to question, to not accept, to agree, not agree. And of course, to do that, I had to develop my inner strength, to rediscover that what my dad taught me is I can do it. I don't want to hear you say, I can't do it, Dad. Say, I can do it. I can figure it out. So to get my spirit back, I started to develop my inner strength. And I was so lucky to have teachers help me do that. I started now, I was on the road to live the indigenous way, to live the power of love, that power of commitment to myself and to other human beings. Not about the love of power, to have power over other people, to dictate to people, to force people to have those power control issues. Once I developed that inner strength, I started to take action to improve my situation in life. I started to use the gift of listening. You know, when I started to listen, I could tell the difference between negative and positive. And I started to hear the beauty. I started to hear the common sense. I started to hear the voices of reason. Beautiful gift at listening. I remember I was told in one of the circles, and I've been in many circles, this one facilitator said, it's dangerous not to listen. Because you might miss a teaching that could save your life or enhance your life, or to save your friends and relatives' lives or to enhance their lives. And I started to learn that the highest form of respect we can give another human being is to listen to them. Then I learned the gift of affection. Oh, I had that throughout my life, and at times I didn't recognize it. People care for me. I started to feel the affection coming through the air. From people that weren't family that would say to me, no, Jerry, I love you. Oh, I used to be nervous when people would say that to me, you know. And then I started to appreciate it, that gift of affection. I learned the gift of laughter, to laugh at myself when I make a mistake, to learn from it, to laugh with others. It's an indigenous gift, this gift of laughter and humor. I learned the gift of generosity, to give, not to be afraid to share and to give, not to hoard things or to be greedy. I was taught that when you give away, it'll come back to you. Then I learned the gift of silence and solitude. Because before that, even when I'm sleeping, my mind was noisy and unsettled. I'd grind my teeth at night, wake myself up making noises, nightmares, in a crowd of people. You know, even if it's silent, my mind was busy. This was actually the beginning of developing my inner strength, was going into solitude when I was put on the mountain and being by myself for 4 days and 4 nights, looking at myself, looking at my life. 2 days, the first 2 days, my mind was just busy chattering, and I was just questioning and doubting, why am I doing this? This is stupid. Why did you agree to do this? Leave. You don't have to do this. You know, my mind was fighting me. But after I accepted it, that I'm doing this, I empowered myself, saying, I am doing this to better my life, to better myself. It was then I could hear life around me. It wasn't actually silent. I remember hearing the buzz of a bumblebee going around my lodge. The busyness of it. I could hear the birds. I could hear the wind in the trees. That's a gift. I start to enjoy that. And still today, enjoy that. Then, of course, the biggest gift I have is that I am indigenous, that I come from a beautiful people that had a beautiful way of life. You know, I learned that all healing starts with change. That I need to change myself. That no one can do this for me. People could inspire me, could motivate me, can help me, but I'm the one that makes a decision. Once I accepted that, I started to plan my life, started to live for the day and for the future. Being passive was no longer me. Now I wanted to do something, to be part of the solution, not part of the problem, for me and my community, my family. I now was going to determine my future, at least have dreams of what I want to accomplish, what I want to do in the future. When I was a drinking, drugging man, my only future was to get the drugs and the booze. That's not a good plan. It didn't do me any good. So I had to cast off feelings, the feelings of being inferior. That identity that was created for me, for our people, was that we were inferior people, that there was something wrong with us. I had to cast that off. I did. And I seen the beauty of my people's way of life. When that, I accomplished that, then I started to say, I deserve goodness. It was time then to uplift my spirit and find joy and beauty in life, to break through the limitations put on me. You know that maintaining myself is so important, to look after my mind, my body, and my spirit every day, 24/7, to the best of my ability. I started to learn how to take risks, to do things that, you know, was out of my comfort zone. One of my first ones was to quit drinking. I tell people, hey, I quit drinking. Of course, many of my friends and relatives wanted me to continue. But I took that risk and I told them, and I told people, I finally beat it, and I publicly told my whole community at a meeting, I quit drinking. You guys don't give it to me anymore. I quit. I learned how to take risks, and I'm glad for it. And I still need to do it more. I don't know if it's more or to do as needed, but I still am working on that. One of my big learnings was to be generous. You know, I still falter at that. One of the teachings I was told was, when somebody tells you they like something you have, give it to them. So I started doing that. Then I'd have things, no, I don't want to give this. You know, so I learned to, and I say, well, I'd like to give you this, but it's a family heirloom now. I'm going to pass it on to one of my children. So that's okay. That's acceptable to me. But generally speaking, if someone says I have something, they like it, I'll give it to them. I learned to be generous, but also generous in listening. People speak to me, I'll listen. And I'll be honest, if I don't have the energy to, or I'm tired, or I'm not at this time, sorry. Which, you know, is the best thing to do. I am generous with my time when I have the energy. As I age,